Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Coach K and Joe Show, the special Hoops Edition. The Coach K and Joe Show is brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Now, here's Joe Milligan and Ken Coach K Schulteis.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Coach K and Joe Show. I'm Joe Milligan, joined by Coach Ken Schulteis. Coach K, how are you doing?
Well, Joe, I'll tell you what, it is not the special Hoops edition, but it's always hoop time on the Coach K and Joe Show. We got so much to talk about today. We're going to be talking about IU and Purdue, and Purdue got a new football coach, and a little bit later in a different segment, Boiler Joe, our own Joe Milligan, is going to give us some thoughts on feelings on Purdue basketball. Some of the people might get upset with your thoughts, but we'll have to wait and see. But before we move on at all, Joe, today is December 7th, correct?
Correct.
What is today noted for, Joe?
Pat Milligan's birthday was yesterday. I don't know. Pearl Harbor?
Thank you, Joe. I was going to say, you certainly didn't pay attention in history class. Today is the anniversary, or also known as Pearl Harbor Day, when that terrible attack on Pearl Harbor in Hawaii by the Japanese killed a couple thousand of our soldiers. It was what used to be what 9/11 is to this generation today, but we should never forget it. It kind of opened the door for us to get in World War II and end Hitler, Mussolini, and Japan's run at trying to control the world. So that is what today is most noted for, Pearl Harbor Day. But the second most thing it's noted for is it is the Coach K and Joe Show.
Now, who was your history, U.S. history teacher? If I remember right, I think mine was Dave Eads.
I had Coach Eads as well, and the one thing that I always respected about Coach Eads, in the classroom, he was a good teacher, a really good teacher, and outside the class on the athletic field, he did a great job coaching, and I always respected that because I did not want to be, as I moved on, I did not want to be known as just a coach. I wanted to make sure that I did a good job in the classroom as well as out on the athletic field, and Coach Eads, our history teacher, was a great mentor at that.
Oh, we need to get him to help us get AJ on.
Oh yeah, what a great career his son. Jeez, talk about a punishing football player. And as far you know, talking about football, especially on the high school level, they named Mr. Football for 2012. Do you know who it is?
No, I don't.
He's from Fort Wayne Lures. Do you know who it is?
Excuse me?
He's going to Notre Dame. Do you know who it is?
No, I don't.
It's Jalen Smith, 6'4", 220 pounds, plays defense and some running back for Fort Wayne Lures. He's signed with Notre Dame. He is the first player from Northwestern Indiana. Believe it or not, the first player from Northwestern Indiana to win the Mr. Football Award. And we've seen so many times over the year, Joe, whether it's Mr. Basketball, Mr. Football, many times it goes to somebody in the central part of the state. So good for Jalen Smith and good for Notre Dame. Sounds like they've got a pretty strong recruit coming their way.
Yep, it sure does. And we don't need Notre Dame to get any more strong recruits. So,
well, let's take a few minutes and talk about the new hiring at Purdue. Joe, you're a Purdue fan. You're all over that. We went back and forth. Butch Johnson, they talked about he's gone ahead and taken the Tennessee job. That just happened this morning. A lot of Tennessee fans are complaining. I don't see how they could. He's done remarkable stuff at Cincinnati, 4 conference championships. I think they got a good coach. But Purdue inked the man they wanted from Kent State.
Yep, Darrell Hazel. He's a 2-year head coach at Kent State and turn that program around. I know some people said, well, yeah, he won with the other player coaches' recruits. Well, the other coach didn't win a whole lot with those recruits, so I think he had to have a little bit of something to do with it. And I'm pretty excited about the hire. I think that he'll do a fine job. He's got a lot of ties to Ohio State. Jim Tressel is going to be working as a special consultant for him because, of course, he can't do any coach. Well, he could coach right now, but he has to do a show cause in front of the NCAA. And if he does coach before those 5 years are up, I think he's got to sit out the first five games and a bowl game of anything he coaches. So, you know, I know some people say, oh, Coach Tressel's dirty. I don't know if Coach Tressel's dirty. I think Coach Tressel got caught in a lie. And, you know, who of us hasn't said a lie every once in a while? And to defend Coach Tressel a little bit, I think these kids, if they want to sell a ring or whatever, it's theirs. Why can't they? What's your opinion on that? If I have a ring and it's mine, can I sell it?
I think you should be able to sell it. I think it's ridiculous. You know, in the coming weeks, we'll put a lot of these questions together, and we'll bring back one of our contributors on the high school football side, Bill Somm, who was a part of the NCAA for almost 20 years, and he was part of those rules and dealing with the breaking of rules and following rules and those types of things. But, you know, if you're given something and it's yours, then you have the right to sell it if you want. And, you know, they can say, well, somebody's going to buy it for a lot more than it's worth. Folks, we see people bought on eBay, online, at auction, all over the place for more than it's worth. Businesses sell things for more than they're worth. If somebody wants to buy it, I think it's their right to sell it if they own it. And the billions of dollars that are going into NCAA sports on the universe, I mean, look, Joe, you just opened a can of worms here. Joe, Purdue goes out and hires a new coach. They pretty much double his salary on the football level, $2 million a year. Guy was making $300,000. I think they said Danny Hope was making $900,000. Almost did double his salary, what they were paying a head coach. So here are these coaches getting $3 million, $4 million, $5 million. These players are coming in. Yes, it's amateur sports. I understand that. But billions of dollars come across the table for the universities, for the coaching staff, for the administrations, the athletic directors, and these players are getting nothing out of it. In fact, some academic scholarships come out better than athletic scholarships. And I think, you know, if you watch ESPN 30 for 30 and you watch the Fab Five, which is just a tremendous documentary, and they've got one coming up on Bo Jackson, you know, you see the kind of money, the increase in revenue that happened from the time the Fab Five hit Michigan till they ultimately left. I'm not saying that they should be paid hundreds of thousands of dollars, but they were given these things, so it was legal. It should be legal to sell them. Now, Tressel made the big mistake. He knew about it. He didn't do anything about it. But worse than that, he fibbed or lied about it. Had he not done that, had he just not said anything, I probably would have been even more easy. But I still think he deserves another chance to coach. I don't think he has any more weighing on baggage on his shoulder than John Calipari does, than a lot of coaches in the country do. But, Joe, my feeling is pretty clear about that. I think that if it is theirs, it was given to them, it was legally given to them, then they should have the right to sell it.
Well, I know.
Now back to Purdue's new football coach.
Well, one more comment. I know, you know, by having a daughter that, you know, played Division I sports, and, you know, but, you know, she wasn't hurting for money. But I know, you know, being familiar with Marshall's basketball team, a lot of those guys came from pretty poor families, you know, and, yeah, they get a check every month called the town check to pay for their living expenses. But, you know, what's funny about that is that hardly pays for their living expenses. You know, these kids have got, you know, Ryan was actually better off when she lived in the dorm, because we knew she was going to have a meal every night, not that she ever went hungry. But, you know, I'm saying, if you're coming from a family from a, you know, it's a low-income family, I mean, those kids need some kind of cash, you know, and that's why you see people selling tickets and et cetera. You know, I don't think it's always to get rich. I think sometimes it's just to survive. But back to Purdue, yeah, I like the hire. I'm pretty excited about it. I wish, though, you know, I don't think Danny Hope was a bad person. I don't think he was that bad of a coach. I think he was handcuffed by Purdue University and Morgan Burke by being the assistant coaches being the lowest paid of any of them. You know, what's funny, though, is Brett Bielema, who just left for Arkansas from Wisconsin, I listened to his press conference, and one of the main reasons he left Wisconsin was the same reason, you know, that these SEC schools not are paying some of these assistant coaches upwards to $500,000 a year.
I heard a little bit of his comments, and I think the Big Ten is still back in that Midwestern roots of you can do more with less. This is still just a sport, but you know, these assistant coaches, especially on the football level, and it's true in basketball as well, in any of the sports, they bring so much to the table. They have so much responsibility in game plan. You've got 100 players out there you got to keep track of. They've got to recruit all over the country. It becomes a money game. And again, Joe, it gets back to all this money that people are being paid to coach. And these players are coming in and hoping they got 50 cents in their pocket. But Purdue has stepped up. I think they've taken a page out of IU's book. IU finally stepped up. Now, I hope that they don't make some of the same mistakes that IU made. And, you know, the Hoosiers shelled out a lot of money, especially on the football side, as well as some on the basketball side, in their process of trying to get things going in the right direction. And you're right, Joe. The question mark's still there in football. We think it's going in the right direction, but we still have to see it. But in doing that, you're attracting better talent ready to come in and help put a program together. The second phase of that is what I'm going to lead you into is recruiting. In the end, you got to recruit. Now, Coach is coming into a pretty nice situation at Purdue. I think 31 of 62 players returning on the two-deep depth chart are coming back. So he's got something to work with. But in the end, you got to recruit, and that's going to be the key thing for him. He's got to be able to recruit, not just in the Midwest, but outside the Midwest. And Tom Diener had a little article or some blurbs on his tweet and on his Big Ten.com that a lot of the Big Ten schools, especially Illinois and Indiana's done it, are going after the junior college players. So as you look at his ability to recruit and the needs of Purdue, how do you size that up over the course of the next 24 months?
Yeah, it's good. That'll be the key right there. I mean, recruiting is is the lifeblood of it. The interesting thing I saw in his press conference was he said that a lot of people will look at the stars of recruits, you know, as far as how many stars they have by Rivals and et cetera. And he said he does not look at anything like that and see anybody else's evaluation until he's seen the player himself and has evaluated him, and then he might take a look at that. But that's going to be a big thing for him. I really wish, though. Apparently, they're getting a waiver from the NCAA. He is going to coach Kent State at their bowl game on January 6th.
I saw that, and I thought that was a classy move.
Yeah,
Kent State. I thought that was a real classy move.
Yeah, I just hope he hurries up and starts getting his staff hired, because I'd like I'm sure he's contacted the recruits, but, you know, there are a lot of recruits that get committed to Hope that, you know, were in limbo there for a week and a half, and they'd kind of like to know where they stand. I mean, Danny Etling, I mean, he, you know, Terre Haute South, he's said his verbal is firm, but yet he'd also like to talk to Coach Hazel, which I'm sure he might have by now, just to find out what his philosophy is and where he fits into the picture. I mean, you know.
I think they've moved on those recruits. I really do. And I just, you know, in a time where as soon as you take a different job, you're put out the door, And we've seen it in the NCAA tournament with basketball coaches, in the BCS and bowl games with football coaches. It's really nice that the work that he did at Kent State, he can at least see it to the end, and both universities are working through that. So I got a lot of respect for that, and I think that's a good move. Hey, a couple other things. I had a question come in asking me, what's wrong with Kentucky? I don't know that anything's wrong with Kentucky. If you go on our Facebook page, one of our listeners and guys that'll send a Facebook comment in every once in a while, Brian McAtee, and I kind of were throwing some things back and forth. I think the bottom line is they've got a young team that maybe is not quite as advanced to step up to the college level and be as physical as they needed to be in the beginning against what Kentucky has played a pretty good non-conference schedule. And they don't have a point guard that has shown themselves, that has stepped out of the shadow to say, I can lead this team, distribute the ball, and be the leader on the floor that I need to be. Now, a point guard doesn't always have to be the leader, but it helps because they initiate the offense, they get people into the defense, and we'll see how that develops. I don't know if they're going to be a Final Eight team, a Sweet 16, a NCAA first rounder. I don't know. I do know that when I watch Kentucky play, they got a heck of a lot of talent out on the floor. And if they can shore up some of those pieces, again, it's early in the year, they are going to be a tough team to play. Coach Cal is just a great coach. He's not God. The players are great players to come. They're not NBA stars yet. And there's a growing period. You got to crawl before you walk, walk before you run. At Kentucky, they just do it a little bit more quickly, obviously. But I think UK is going to be fine.
Now, Coach, you know, I have a quick question, and we do have a caller I want to take before the break. My question is to you real quick, though, is what if things don't pan out quite as much? I mean, will most of these guys go to the NBA because of just potential, or is there a fear that possibly some of them don't go and all of a sudden you have to start kicking kids to the curb?
I don't think that's going to happen in Kentucky. I don't know who's going to go this year yet. It's too early to tell. Remember Anthony Davis, he was tougher than heck even at the start, but there were questions all the way through about his ability to score big points on a consistent level. So, you know, Nerland, they're good. They're good, and they're only going to get better. I think the biggest thing that I wonder is some of these guys, when they go out, if they're physically ready to go, as well as mentally, but physically, they seem to be coming up with injuries in their first year a lot more quickly than normal. And again, their bodies, they've gone on to the college level, which is, it's brutal. I mean, it's brutal what they go through. And then they go right into the NBA, which is even more brutal. It's a physical, physical demanding game with travel, practice, and just getting beat up every night. So I think that's more of a question than whether they'll have too many.
Okay, Coach, and we're going to take a caller. We've got a caller calling in. Jeff, you're on the air with Coach K and Joe Show. How you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. How about you? And really enjoy the show. Thanks for putting it all together.
Awesome. What do you got for us?
Well, hey, I know that you've moved into the basketball conversation and want to talk about the Hoosiers. And, you know, you brought up some good points regarding Kentucky. The one thing that this team is different with Kentucky is that you still had some senior leadership on that team last year that carried those young kids through that beginning part of the season. Now you don't really have that, and that's why they've struggled so much. But with the Hoosiers,
I agree with you, and I think that's why the emergence of a leader on the court is going to be so important for the direction of that team. And when I say direction, I don't mean winning games. They're going to win games, but where they can go by the end of the season. And conversely, you want to talk Hoosiers, you look at a Hoosier team that has that leadership. They have those older players, the more experienced players, Jordan Hulls, Watford, and those guys coming back. And even Cody Zeller has grown up quite a bit in 1 year. But, I mean, I don't know if you see it, but I know I watch games, and I can still see that his youth and the fact that he's a sophomore out there. So it is good to have the senior leadership. It is good to have the guys who have been there. They don't have to be the stars. They do not have to be the stars, the leading scorers. They just have to be guys who knows, they know what it takes to get it done. It's just like coaches. You don't have to have been a great player to be a great coach. You just have to know what it takes to get it done. And I think the Hoosiers are kind of like that Kentucky of the year before, but maybe with even a little bit more leadership.
No question. You've got Hulls, like you mentioned, who's been through the wars now on his fourth season, and Watford. But you've got the junior class that's strong with Oladipo and Sheehy that has really stepped up in times where Cody was on the bench or somebody else was not able to come through with scoring. Those guys have stepped up. You've got a lot of weapons on that team, not just on the floor as far as scoring, but you've got a lot of weapons as far as mental abilities on the floor. They do handle themselves very well, and they distribute the ball very well. Defensively, I think they're better than they were last year. They've been able to stretch out, and I think one concern I have with this Indiana team right now is the strength of schedule. The Carolina win was nice, but they weren't exactly playing against the Michael Jordan, James Worthy Carolina team. That's not a very good North Carolina team at this point. And I really think that in years down the road, Coach Green's really got to upgrade that schedule. Central Connecticut States and the teams like that are not going to prepare an Indiana to be as strong in the tournament as they would be if they're playing the Carolinas, the Louisvilles, the Kentuckys. They really need to do something to upgrade that schedule.
Oh, man, you make a great point because – and you know your Hoosiers and your Hoops, I'll tell you that right now. But you make a great point on the schedule, and I've got that down on my notes to hit on. And I certainly don't want to beat it up, but, folks, the Hoosiers have played a soft non-conference schedule. And I think one of the parts of the mental part of the approach of the game was when we came off that North Carolina win. It was a huge win, a strong win. Wasn't, as he said, the great North Carolina teams or even a really talented team yet, a good team, but how we came back after that, we kind of struggled. We went into a little bit of a fog. And when you play that light schedule, that can happen. Having said that, I do want to make a point about that junior class. When those guys came in, they had all of it put on their shoulders. They were the ones that had to try to find a way to dig and crawl themselves out of the hole or perceived hole that IU was in. And so there was a lot put on them. They took a lot of media pressure, fan pressure, the responsibility to help bring things back. Coach Green was relentless that they keep working, keep pushing. Their game had to evolve. I still worry that this team, when Cody Zeller leaves the floor and things get a little tough, will revert back to a dribble, dribble, dribble and try to penetrate everything and then take a quick shot. But we'll see. But I do agree. We got to upgrade that schedule. Why was the schedule weakened? I don't know, other than they thought they were going to go through a period where they were going to struggle, and they wanted to put some games in there where they thought they could be competitive and build the confidence level. I'm not a big believer in that, not at Indiana University, not at one of the great basketball universities in the country, but I think that's kind of where it's at. But you're right. We got to get that non-conference schedule back up. We got to make it competitive. If we take a couple losses, that's okay. Fans understand that. But it's going to make us tougher going into that Big Ten, and maybe we won't have a lapse. We won't have the lapse in the Big Ten that we might be headed for because we're not used to playing some tough back-to-back games.
Now, Coach and Jeff, I got a quick question real quick, okay? Jeff, when I checked to you, are you a legendary Jeff Cochran from the Southridge Raiders?
No. I'm the other Jeff Cochran.
Jeff Cochran from
Ohio.
Okay, just wanted to make sure. You know, I wanted to make sure we weren't talking to Southridge legend there. So
that is the question that every time I'm in DuBois County I get asked. So I understand the question.
Oh, this is goof.
Yes, it is.
Oh my God. Okay, I don't know.
I'm
why
glad
I'm
you
thinking.
Figured it out. Did Pearl Harbor bomb you back there? I don't quite understand.
Well, I should have known by his IU love who he was.
Jeff,
I love that only him and Pup Holes and et cetera can appreciate.
That's right.
Jeff, give me your early impressions of Yogi Ferrell.
I'll tell you what, Schultz, I think he is an outstanding point guard. What I like about him so far is he's not looking to score, and I think he knows that it's really not his role to score, but he is as good of a distributor of the basketball as we've had there in a long time. And I think he has unbelievable court vision. I think the one knock on his game, and I think it's probably going to have to improve at some point, and I'm sure it will, is defensively. For a kid that quick, he should be a better on-the-ball defender. And, you know, I think part of that stems from Eddie Schilling at Park Tudor played a lot of zone. And he's got to be more of a man-to-man philosophy and more of a man-to-man mentality to be able
to
play.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think right now he's not sure of what that shot has to be. He needs some work with his follow-through, his setup, and his footwork, both on the shooting end and his footwork on the defensive end. And you make a great point. He's trying to come into a more man-to-man type league, and he's got to move his feet. You can't play upstairs. And what I mean by that, you can't play with just your hands and depend on your quickness. You've got to be able to move your feet, get yourself in position, be there before the offensive man gets there, and be in a position to dictate where the offensive man wants to go. And you do that with your feet, your feet, your feet. Goof, thanks for calling in. Get back
right, guys,
with us again.
It.
We go to break.
We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Happy holidays.
And great to hear from you. Anybody else out there that wants to call in and give us a comment, please do that. We're going to go to break. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Looking for a dentist close to home? Look no further than Harmon Dental Care. Harmon Dental Care offers dentistry for the whole family. Cleanings and exams, natural-looking fillings, crowns, bridges, and more. With convenient hours and a clean modern office, you'll feel completely comfortable. Call Harmon Dental Care today to schedule an appointment at 482-1060. Harmon Dental Care, creating beautiful smiles.
We trust that you're a fine, upstanding, God-fearing man with Christian morals and principles who will set an example and a standard of leadership for our boys. Tell me, do you believe in man-to-man or zone defense?
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show, and we are joined by WJTS Jasper play-by-play man, Brent Weibel. Brent, how you doing?
Just fine. Do you guys have a nice Thanksgiving?
Oh, turkey out the wazoo, as they say, and a nice nap to go with it afterwards. We haven't talked to you in a couple weeks, Brent. How you been doing?
Well, I've been fine. I actually spent Thanksgiving myself in South Florida and had a chance to take part and actually see some high school football playoffs down in the Palm Beach area, Palm Beach County. And boy, I tell you what, Coach, they play a fast game down there. But probably came away most surprised about anything with the football down there is that they don't mark the yard lines on the on their football fields. They don't put the yard measurement on, so you don't know where the 50 or the 40 or the 30 is. And they also don't have 25-second clocks, which for as big as high school football is in Florida, surprised me immensely.
Wow. How are the crowds down there?
Pretty good. I got a chance to see Palm Beach Gardens and Palm Beach Central play, and those schools are kind of like Jasper and Southridge, Coach. They're only about three or four miles apart and the same area, and, boy, they really locked heads. And then I got to see Dwyer High School and Jupiter play Boyd Anderson of Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And Dwyer High School has more NFL players that are graduates of Dwyer High School than any other high school in the United States. So I saw some very good football.
It sounds like it. It sounds like it. Well, it's good to have you back on the show, and we go from football, and we move into hoop season. And and Jasper is off with two games under their belt. A loss to start with Evansville Harrison, a victory on the road to Mount Carmel, and I believe the Memorial Tigers coming up this weekend, as well as Bedford North Lawrence.
Right. It's going to be the first double weekend of the year. Coach Gable always looks forward to those. He feels like that tells him a lot about his team. And I think kind of what you were talking about really with the Hoosiers schedule, you need to get into those tough games to really tell a lot about your team. I know Harrison is very talented. Kenny, I saw them play last year. The Duncan brothers are the real deal. I really kind of feel like, I don't know how you look at this, but I think the basketball, the high school basketball in the city of Evansville in the last probably 5 or 6 years has just been phenomenal. It's been as strong as what I can remember in my 37 years of broadcasting. I mean, just great players, great coaches, great teams. I really feel like Evansville's on a high there. And then I had seen this Jasper team practice a couple of times. Love to go to practice and just kind of watch how the coaches prepare their teams. And had seen this team play, and I was able to hear your show from last week from down in Florida, but I know that a concern of this Jasper team is outside shooting, and Coach Gable knew that. He knew that coming in. The coaching staff's aware of it. But that being said, when they went over to Mount Carmel to play, I didn't know what to expect. Mount Carmel has a junior and a sophomore on their team. Levi Laws is the sophomore. And then their junior is that Metcalf boy, their quarterback from their football team, who actually a year ago had put 45 on the Wildcats at Cabby O'Neill Gymnasium. And that was a big concern to all of us, was how the Wildcats would handle those two guys when they went on the road and went to play them in their place. And they held Laws to 13 points and Metcalf to 4. And Kenny, quite honestly, that's where they won the ball game. You good coaches always say defense wins. Well, there's a great example, because they won the ball game 55-50. They did not shoot the lights out. They are still struggling with the outside shot. I'm talking about the Wildcats, but they won that game because of their defensive effort on two very, very good players. In fact, Coach Gable says told me after the game when I interviewed him, that Levi Laws is as good a ball handler and distributor as a sophomore as he has seen. And he compared him very favorable to some of the very strong guards in the city of Evansville.
Yeah, and Brent, I agree on the defensive end exactly. And I think last week I mentioned that sometimes you're going to win ugly. And this Jasper team may have to win a lot of their games ugly, but it's better to win ugly than lose pretty. And this physical team that they have, if they can come out mentally ready, they've got a little quickness where they need to have it, and they're physical all around the floor. So if they can come out mentally ready to defend, and, you know, I used to tell my teams, and I'll tell you what, when I work out with high school kids now, work them out a little bit, I'll tell them, you can always come mentally ready to play defense. You may not shoot well that night. You may not handle the ball perfectly that night, but you can always come mentally ready to give your best defensive effort. And if the Cats can do that, it'll keep them in games as they learn to come up with the easy shot, creating the easy shot, or hitting the outside shot. And this weekend will be a huge test. And I know as a coach, I would love this weekend, and I would hate this weekend, because I'm playing two quality programs who are going to test me in every way, and my guys are going to have to be ready. Eberhard and Auker for Memorial, a young team in a lot of spots, but a team that can score. But I think, again, if the Cats will use the physicality on the court and defend, I think they got a great shot of winning the game against Memorial.
Well, I think that's a great point, and that's exactly mimicking the words that Coach Gable said about after the game at Mount Carmel. last weekend about both teams. The Cats are going to have to play smart. They're going to have to play hard. And I think you're right. I think this team is going to have some ugly wins. They just struggle at shooting from the outside, and it doesn't really make any difference whether they're guarded or open. You just don't know what's going to happen. They're not a real strong perimeter shooting team, but you know, you can't wave the magic wand and make them all of a sudden great outside shots. They do have a strong presence inside. They have a good inside game, and they got some good play out of a junior, Philip Hipschman, who had suffered a broken finger toward the end of the football season. In fact, he missed the last several games, and he actually came in when Austin Ollis got in some severe foul trouble at Mount Carmel. And they got a nice game out of Phillip off the bench, but Ollis also gives a great presence. And I think the coaching staff's still kind of waiting for Austin to kind of step in and play the kind of basketball and show the leadership and that big step forward to that next level that he brought on the football field. And I think once if he's able to do that, and I don't see any reason why he can't, it's going to be a very strong team to contend with, because they are so strong and solid inside. Now, that being said, it kind of reminds me of an Ed Schulteis coach Jasper team, because they have a young junior varsity. There are four freshmen that are on that junior varsity. There are no juniors, so they're going strictly with sophomores and freshmen, and they start three freshmen on that group, and they have some outside shooting. The quarterback off the football team, Nolan Ahrens, has a real nice outside shot. And so does Caleb Begley's little brother, Tyler, a real nice outside shot. And if those guys are able to come along and grow on the JV level as the year goes on, something that Coach Gable really doesn't do. He doesn't play a lot of young guys, especially, Kenny, kind of like you did. If they're not ready defensively, he doesn't want to put them out on the floor. But those are guys that can stroke the outside shot, and if they can grow into some varsity minutes, could help alleviate that shooting problem just a little bit. Now, that being said, I also want to say this, and I've been meaning to say this before. I thought your dad, the Silver Fox, Ed Schulteis, was one of the best coaches that I ever saw at bringing guys along off of the JV as it got close to tournament time when he was at Jasper High School. It just always seemed, and I always kind of, as a young broadcaster, I kind of would look at the roster and try to figure out who that guy was going to be. Was that going to be a Rick Bagley, or who was he going to pull off of that JV and stick into that to that varsity level to help him win ball games? But he was a master at doing that, and that's not an easy thing to do for a coach.
No, it isn't, because you have to be patient and you have to wait, and it helps when you can do that, at least through that first half of the season. And then there are times when maybe you got to plug that young guy in because he can shoot. I remember a Michael Lewis that played for me. Our intentions were to play him on the JV through the first half of the year, and it was pretty clear after one game that if the varsity was going to have any success, we needed somebody who could add some points and handle the ball, and Michael Lewis just had to come up, and we went on to have a great year. But the Rick Begleys and the people like that through the 70s that came up off the JV, they got seasoned for a while. They got to play. You know, it was more important to put that junior on the JV and let him play than sit him on the varsity and watch the game. And again, it comes down to what do you want to accomplish? Do you want kids to get better so they can come through for you? Or is it more important for them to sit there and say, I've got a varsity uniform? I know as a junior, after about three or four games, it was pretty clear that I wasn't going to get much playing time on the varsity, so I asked to go play half a JV game because I knew I couldn't get any better if I didn't get in the game. So it's not always easy for a junior, a young man, to do that, but it does pay dividends, and Coach Schulteis was really good at that, and he had a great staff that helped buy into that and develop those players to play on the varsity. You know, Brett, as we end this segment, give me two keys, other than developing the shot, getting the outside shot, two keys for the Wildcats going forward.
Well, I think one of them is definitely to get Austin Ollis to be a inside presence, because Mark Giesler's off to a great start. He's doing everything that you could ask out of a senior. He's scoring, he's rebounding, he's taking charges, he's playing solid defense. He's provided tremendous leadership. I mean, I'm really impressed with the way he has come in and been ready to go mentally and physically for this season. And if they can get Austin Aulis to performing the same way, then I think that they'll really have something. And I think the other thing is the guards, you know, although that they struggle a little bit on the perimeter game, they still have the ability to get to the rim. And they've got some quickness, as you talked about. They've got some strength. They can handle the ball very well, and they're capable of getting inside. And I think if they are able to do that, even though they may pull up and miss an outside shot, I think it's going to open things up for the inside presence, and I think it's going to make Jasper a better basketball team.
Well, we look forward to seeing how the Cats do this weekend. Some of those big physical kids, they need to, as they get their footwork down, I think it's going to lead to some successful opportunities for them. We enjoy having you back, Brent, from South Florida. And as we get ready to go to break here, when we come back, we'll be listening to Boiler Joe rant about Boiler basketball. Our own Joe Milligan is going to give his thoughts on Purdue basketball. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Does your website work for you? Think of your website as an employee. You wouldn't continue to pay an employee that didn't do his job, so don't pay for a website that doesn't produce results. Josh at Idea Fusion Media can help whip your site into shape. If you don't have a site yet, let Idea Fusion Media walk you through the entire process, from domain registration and hosting setup to the design and implementation of your site. To see how Idea Fusion Media can help you, visit IdeaFusionMedia.com. Again, that's IdeaFusionMedia.com. Idea Fusion Media, web design that works for you.
Forget about the crowds, the size of the school, their fancy uniforms, and remember what got you here. Focus on the fundamentals that we've gone over time and time again. And most important, don't get caught up thinking about winning or losing this game. If you put your effort and concentration into playing to your potential, to be the best that you can be, I don't care what the scoreboard says at the end of the game, in my book, we're going to be winners. Okay?
Have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
And we're back to the Coach K and Joe Show. This is Joe.
Boiler Joe. You're Boiler Joe right now.
I'm Boiler Joe, and, you know, put my Boiler Joe hat on, you know, midway through the Xavier game, and just how pathetic it was. And I know that they're playing young people, but I started thinking not only about how badly they were playing and how DJ Bird was a big oafer, the senior leader, and I started thinking about the program as a whole, and you know how Coach Painter kind of held us hostage a year and a half ago as far as going to Missouri if you didn't get more money. And, you know, money's fine. We all like money, but we also have to earn our money. And, you know, I guess we did it because he had a pretty decent class this year, freshman. He's got a pretty decent class next year's freshman. But as a whole, I started thinking about the, you know, why we're where we're at, and where we're at is because he did a really pathetic job recruiting for a number of years there, the DJ Birds, the Travis Carrolls, the Marchus, you know, et cetera. They're all okay players, but they're never going to get Purdue to where we want to be. Now, I know I read Golden Black Illustrated, and I read all about Tom Crean, and, you know, I've been guilty of, you know, even taking a pot shot at calling him Clappy and et cetera. But I started analyzing it, you know, and I think he's got an easier job than Painter does as far as getting kids, to, you know, top kids, because he is coaching at IU. But I think he plays the game. I hear people laughing about his tweets and et cetera, so forth. But I think he realizes that, you know, we're in a different era, and you got to kind of massage these kids' egos a lot more than they used to. And I just think that personal opinion is Coach Painter needs to get into that a little bit more. I know everyone says, oh, he's a man of high integrity and blah, 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 blah. He's just going to tell them what he wants to hear, which is fine. But at the same time, if you're going to get the Brandon Dawsons, if you're going to get the Gary Harrises, aren't you going to have to do a little bit of that? What's your opinion, Coach?
So really, this is the Boiler Joe rant. But let me ask you: Are you criticizing Coach Painter and the Purdue basketball program because of his coaching? Or are you criticizing his recruiting?
Well, I read the message boards a lot. I'm on Golden Black every day, even on Pigs some. And, you know, I read where he coaches people up, and I see Sandy Marchuse, I see Travis Carroll, I see Patrick Beatty before he went to football. I see these kids, and I got to kind of question, you know, or is he really coaching them up? I mean, I'm sorry. It's tough sometimes to be a Purdue fan, you know. And I'm sure when we get Kurt Guxel on here, he can emphasize he's a Cub fan, you know.
Well, so. Kurt, Purdue's always going to break your heart. I've tried to tell you that. Tell you and several other. In fact, our next guest, our Glory Days segment, Coach Andy Igel, outstanding high school basketball coach. Boiler fan through and through. I've seen the guy literally come to tears at Purdue breaking his heart in the NCAA tournament. But let me just go back. First of all, I think that Matt Painter is an outstanding coach. I think that his teams play excellent defense. I think they work hard. Did he have some miscues on some recruiting? Possibly. But, you know, would we be bragging on IU right now to the point we have been if Cody Zeller doesn't go there? If Cody Zeller chooses to go to North Carolina and follow his brother or go somewhere else, do we have the same excitement and euphoria for IU? I don't think that we would, and they might not have gotten some of the recruits they've gotten. But let's go back to Gene Katie, who I think, my gosh, if he doesn't come in at the same time Coach Knight's there, I mean, he is just the best coach in the state of Indiana. Great coach. But you got to recruit. And he had Frank Kendrick and a couple other guys, Coach Weber, helped him recruit the state, recruit the area. And you get that one really good player, Glenn Robinson, for example. Or you take some of these guys that came in at 6'8", skinny, and you turn him into these ginormous physical beasts that he had with a couple of his guys. My point is that Purdue, because they know how to play defense, because they know how to work hard, because they do things offensively the right way, they're one solid recruit away from being a team that's going to compete in that top three or four spot at the Big Ten level. I understand your frustration, Joe, but recruiting is tough. And does he need to maybe look at social media and find ways to – you know, he's not going to – you know, the one thing that coaches struggle with, I did and probably still would, is that we want to create the game the way we want it to be created. Sometimes we can't do that. Sometimes we have to become a part of the creation of what we're trying to get. We've got to give here – to get there. And Coach Green does do a great job of tweeting and being seen. And, you know, he might go recruit a player. I was at a game a year or so ago. He came into the gym. I don't know that he watched the player at all. He was just talking to the fans and talking to the other people around, creating the persona that this is a great place to go, that he's a great place to guy to play for. And it kind of takes off from there.
Well, I mean, yeah. And I just, you know, people, I know Purdue people, a lot, they have fun making fun of his tweets and stuff like that. But I got to thinking, you know, last Saturday, sitting at a swim meet, love the 5 minutes I get to watch Rafe swim in the 5 hours I'm there, but have a lot of time to daydream, and started thinking about it, you know, and started thinking, you know, he plays the game, you know, and I know Cody Zeller, you know, had a lot to do with that. But you know what, though? Before Cody Zeller got there, you know, I know I use a great program to go to, but, you know, they were in the lowest of lows when Will Sheehy and Victor Oladipo came there. They came there.
Those weren't hugely high recruits.
But
we were fortunate. We got some great athletes who have been developing into pretty good basketball players. Chances there to take the great athlete and hopefully develop them into good basketball players. And
well, I guess
it's worked out.
I guess the main reason I'm mad at Coach Painter right now is I don't like defending and bragging on Tom Crean. And here I have for about the last 10 minutes saying that he probably does things that the way I'd like Matt Painter to do them. And I don't like that, Coach. I don't like it at all. I don't like talking good about an IU coach, you know? That's the main reason I never liked Bill Mallory. I couldn't hate him, you know? I couldn't hate him, and I don't like that, you know? Michael Lewis, when he went there, you know, I was like, oh, I've got to be kind of for IU now, you know? But I used to tell Michael, as I told Michael after he said, he goes, hey, he knew I'm a Purdue person. What do you think about me going to IU? I said, I hope you score 40 points a night, but I'm going to have to hope you get beat by one. So... You know, and, you know, I don't like talking like this. And, you know, it makes me feel weird, and I don't like it at all. So you know.
Well, I mean, the bottom line is you've got a good coach in Matt Painter. If he needs to make some adjustments in recruiting, then that's what he has to do with his coaching staff and his approach. But you got to remember, he's battling Crean, Thad Matta, just to name two, and then you got the guy up at Michigan State he's battling, and they're all taking players out of the same area. So he's got to find a way to either get into some other spots that have some unknowns or potential, or he's got to find that assistant coach, that recruiter, that can touch a recruit the way he needs to emotionally and mentally, to get them over the hump and get them to Purdue versus IU, Ohio State, or Michigan State. Hey, ranting Joe, Boiler Joe. Hey, if you agree with Joe or disagree, send your comments in. Send us a tweet, text us, send us an email. We're going to get ready to go to break here. Coming back, we got our Glories Day segment. We've got former Eastern Green coach Andy Igel. You might remember his team's coming down to South Ridge Regional several times. Great friend of mine, great coach. Right now, doing the administrative thing, we'll have him back in just a few moments. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show. Oh, you're still listening to the Coach K and Joe Show. We haven't gone to break yet. Hey, one of the things I wanted to touch on, I had a question earlier from Tony. He says, what are your thoughts about the Colts letting Manning go after the season he is having? My thoughts haven't changed from the beginning. I said a few shows ago that I thought it was the best thing the Colts could do financially and from a building process. And I thought they had to make the move. I hated it. I'm a loyalist. I'm a guy that says, this guy's given us so much, we owe him. But at that point, you've got a quarterback coming off a major injury. You're not sure. You've got the first-round draft choice. You got to look at that. You had a great, great quarterback coming out in Luck, Andrew Luck, and if not, Robert Griffin III. You had to make that move. But we've seen how it's paid off for Peyton Manning, too. His greatness has shown. I think Mike Greenberg of Mike and Mike said, he has shown he's the greatest regular season quarterback of all time. I guess that's a compliment. Might also be a little bit of a rip. But Manning has gone into Denver. and done exactly what we thought Peyton Manning could still do. And he's led that team to just a fabulous run. I think they have three losses, and most of those losses were early in the year. He's just done a fabulous, fabulous job. I think the Colts win. I think Peyton Manning wins. Obviously, Denver wins. The only disappointment is we don't get to see Peyton Manning do it at Lucas Oil Stadium with a Colts uniform on and the horseshoe. But the bottom line is I think the Colts did the right thing. Yeah, it's tough for me to swallow. I said I'm a loyalist. But it had to be done. And I think it's worked out well. We've got a great quarterback for the future in Andrew Luck. We've got to build around him in Indianapolis. And Peyton Manning's got a great chance to take Denver far in the playoffs. And regardless, he's proved that he can still do the job. Also had a question come in to me about how come nobody's talking about Syracuse. Kevin wants to know how come nobody's talking about Syracuse. Hey, Syracuse is a fourth-ranked team in the country. Syracuse can play. Syracuse can score. And like all Jim Boeheim teams, Syracuse can rebound and Syracuse can defend. And they are a team to be reckoned with. They have four or five guys in double figures. They don't even have their great center who was suspended. He could dominate the paint area. Syracuse versus IU. Dan Dockage tweeted that earlier in the day. What a game that would be. What a matchup of athletic ability, outside shooting, handling the Syracuse zone. One of the areas that I think that IU would really have to work on is the rebounding end. They'd have to make sure they're blocking out because I think Syracuse would match them in a lot of areas. But I think in the end, you've got Cody Zeller. You've got to be able to handle his runouts, although teams will be ready to do that. But Syracuse is a great team. They've got a great coach. It is consistent year in and year out. I can remember a few years ago when those people that come out and say, oh, you know, the coach has been there too long. You know, programs run in cycles, but good coaches, their cycles don't go as deeply down as others. But when they go down a little bit, people come out and complain, gripe. He doesn't have it anymore. I can remember the great Cabby O'Neill at Jasper, 2 years removed from a state championship. He said the fans were complaining that he didn't have it anymore. So Jim Boeheim stays with it. Syracuse handles the people calling for a change. He stays in there, and he's got the cues right back on target, as any great coach will with a great program. So no doubt about it. No doubt about it. Syracuse is a team to be reckoned with as long as they stay healthy because they got a great system and a great coach. Now we're ready to go to break, and when we come back, we'll have our Glory Days segment with a good friend of mine and an outstanding coach and a Purdue fan, Andy Eigel. You're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Join Ken, Coach K, Shel Tice, and Joe Milligan every Friday from 11 to 1 for the Coach K and Joe Show. High school sports, college sports, pro sports. They will talk about it all with guests from around the state. The Coach K and Joe Show brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. You can listen to the Coach K and Joe Show by going to jaspertodayonline.com and clicking on the link. You can also listen to archive shows there. It's the Coach K and Joe Show every Friday at 11 on JasperTodayOnline.com.
Hey, this is Coach K. Want to get the word out about your business? Well, team up with the Coach K and Joe Show and form a winning marketing team. We've had over 5,000 listeners through our first three shows, and we can help put your marketing dollars to work 24 hours a day. Through our live shows and our 24-hour available podcasts, your marketing dollars can work for you around the clock. So give us a call at Milligan Communications, 812-630-2449, and we will help your marketing dollars to score for you.
Cleat, you tell them. Sectionals at 33. 1 point down. 5, 4, 3, two, one, let her fly. In and out. Yeah, well, that's fouled.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
This is Tom Deanhart of the Big Ten Network, and you're listening to the Coach K and Joe Show. Hey, we're back on the Coach K and Joe Show, and I have the Glory Days segment, and I'm just so excited to have this gentleman on. He's not only an outstanding coach, not only a great educator as far as directing young men in their lives, but a good friend of mine, former assistant, Glory Days guy, former Eastern Green coach, Andy Eigel. Andy Eigel, how are you doing today?
I couldn't be better. And the opportunity to talk basketball with my good friend, Kenny Schulteis, it's a great day. It's always good on a Friday night or Friday during the day to start talking about Friday night basketball.
Well, and that's the wonderful thing about it is you'll not only be our Glory's Day segment person today, but you're also going to be a contributor down the line for us talking about basketball up in the Bloomington, Greene County area. But before we talk about Andy Eigel and his career and some of the things we've gone through and the rest of the basketball world and the fact that you're a lot like Shooter was on Hoosiers as far as missing the shot, I'm just teasing. tell us about your family. You got a big day coming up. I believe my goddaughter Chelsea's going to be graduating here in a day or two. And tell us a little bit about your family, where you're at, what you're doing right now, and then we'll get into your career.
Well, daughter Chelsea, oldest of five Eagles, will graduate Saturday from University of Southern Indiana with an elementary education. We're very, very proud of her and excited about what her future holds for her. And then I have two sons, and they're both in college, one at IUPUI in Indianapolis studying sports management. Another son has chosen to take the route of coaching. My youngest son, Tyler, is going to Ivy Tech right now, but he's majoring in education, and he's going to get into coaching. He's coaching Eastern Green 7th grade, so I'm still staying close to it through him a lot. And then my other daughter is at the great Purdue University studying health professions. We're very proud of her. In fact, I'm going to leave right after school to pick her up to come down for the graduation. And my youngest daughter is a freshman here at Eastern Green High School. So that keeps me and my wife, my lovely wife, 26 years, Diana, very, very busy. And then my dean of students job at Eastern Green is very challenging.
Well, if anybody can handle the challenges, it's you, Coach. Coach, your daughter that's at Purdue, she had a pretty good volleyball career.
She really, for what she had from an athletic standpoint, I was very happy with the way that she performed. She ended up being the IHSAA Mental Attitude Award winner at the state finals a year ago. And also, she was all-conference a couple years. And then also on the basketball end, she was all-conference 3 years and had a couple opportunities to play at smaller schools. But she chose to move forward with her education and hopes to be a physician's assistant before it's all done and take care of her dear old dad when he retires.
Well, Coach, that's great about your family. And obviously, you and I became not only working partners when I took the job at Washington Catholic and you were my first assistant, but we became very close friends as well. And even though, as I like to tell people, seasons change in your life, people aren't in it as much as they were. You don't spend as much time talking. That relationship bond never changes. And I think that's true in our situation. But let's talk a little bit about your basketball career. You started out as an assistant with me at Washington Catholic. You were in college. You were working your way through for an education degree, and which I always respected. I'd get you a mellow yellow once in a while because that's all we could probably pay you. You went on to take your first head coaching job at Vincennes Reveille. Kind of give our listeners a track of your career as far as your places you went to up until the point you got to Eastern Green.
Well, and I got started in this crazy business back in 1981 when Dave Werlin was there to come to Washington Catholic, and he asked me to get involved with coaching, and so I did it a couple of years at some of the lower levels, and you know, didn't really know at that point whether it was something I wanted to pursue, but I really know in my heart that when you arrived at Washington Catholic and asked me to be your JV coach, that it was definitely something that I wanted to move forward with. And I'd already started classes, but you talk about glory days. Well, when I look back on those 5 years that we spent together at Catholic, those were great years. We had a lot of successful teams and, more importantly, great kids that have went on to be successful individuals. And we could probably talk the whole show about that. But from there, I think that was a tough year, you know, finishing the schooling and getting ready to move forward. And you were getting ready to make a move. And so I went ahead and took the head coaching job at Vincennes Reveille. Obviously, Reveille, a small enrollment, you know, not much talent when I arrived there, but I had the great idea that I was going to wave a wand and Reveille was going to become a power. but I spent 4 years there and really loved the people, great community, loved their basketball, but financially I just couldn't make it. I had the 4 of 5 children. Brittany was a baby there, and we just had to make a move. So from that point, we went to Frontier High School up in northern Indiana, just north of Lafayette, actually 8 minutes from Mackey Arena, I might add. But it was a place that had been a football power, but basketball had their tradition under Norris Niersey, and they had Noah Haynes, who's now the head basketball coach at Indianapolis Brebeuf, and we knew we had a challenge. And, you know, we went through some years where we got some big wins, but just getting those kids in the gym and realizing what the commitment took, just never felt like we got where we needed to be. And then the cure-all for me, and as with you, which you taught me very well, family had to be first. And I came home one day, and I was athletic director also at that job, and my daughter Brittany was walking. I asked my wife how long that had been going on. She said, oh, for a couple of weeks. And I said, I'm leaving. This AD and coach is way too much time. So I put my resume out and interviewed actually at 2 Greene County schools, one Shackamack and the other Eastern Greene. And they both offered me the jobs. And, you know, I'd always admired Eastern Greene from a distance. It had a lot of basketball success and basically, you could tell the community was really passionate about it. So in 1996, I accepted their offer and became their head basketball coach.
Well, and it didn't stop there. I mean, you took a very good program to the next level, Coach. Teams that competed at the highest level against their schedule, winning games, advancing in the tournament. It had to be just exciting to see that growth of that program and see the enthusiasm in the community, a community that's kind of spread out because of its rural makeup, but it had to be exciting to see those people feel good about the recognition that their basketball program was bringing them.
Well, and, you know, when I got here, I knew – you know, Mark Barnheiser, who was the coach that was here at this point, and we had talked many, many times about the job, and I knew there was a little bit of talent, but they had not won a sectional in the history of the school, and I knew that was going to be a tough challenge. And at first they were playing in the Bedford sectional with Bloomington North, Bloomington South, Edgewood, Bedford, it was just highly competitive. In fact, my first year at Eastern, we went 18-3, and we had the fourth best record in the sectional. And so we did not win at that point. And then class basketball came along, and it has been good to Eastern Green. And, you know, like any place that's going to be successful, you know, you've got to surround yourself with good people. Another lesson that, you know, you and Coach Worland taught me that, you know, you're not going to be successful unless you get good people. So I surrounded myself with good assistant coaches, loyal assistant coaches, and then we had some talent that bought in to really spending 12 months a year at the game. And, you know, 16 years, over 200 wins, but the thing I'm most proud of is, you know, is the kids and the quality of people they became. You know, some people say, well, that's a little corny and all that, but you and I both know that that's what it's about. And, you know, in 16 years, we won 19 championships, and, you know, that's all great, but the thing that I relish and cherish the most are the telephone calls and having the chance to be a part of so many guys' lives and help them be successful and go to their weddings and hear about their firstborn children. That's just really neat. And then to leave the program in the hands of probably my closest player in my 16 years, Levi Carmichael, who is like my son, no question about it. To do that and see it left in such good hands was exactly, I couldn't have made a better plan.
And you're right, Coach. The playing and the practicing and the games are just a couple of steps in a staircase that good coaches, and I mean this, good coaches look at. I want to take these young men and give them a direction and help them know that they have more in them than they think they do. They can accomplish more than they think they can, and then they can help people do the same. And sometimes that calls for us to just be tough and say, I'm not going to be the best friend you had today, but I'm going to try to be a great friend for you that you can look at going forward. And you did that at Eastern. I think you did that everywhere, but you did that at Eastern. And kind of talk to us a little bit about when you broke through on the tournament side, winning that first sectional, how important that is mentally to not just the kids who win that sectional, but to the program in general for those young men coming forward.
Well, it meant everything. And I'll never forget the night in 2001 at North Knox with a sold-out crowd and really not understanding, having, you know, been a part of sectional championships with you and seeing other guys win it and being around the Washington Ligoti Bar Reeve where winning tournaments was second nature, not really knowing what that community had to get over on that night because it was much more than just winning a basketball game. It was getting a whole culture of not being successful in March over, get over that. And the feeling that night was just, you can't describe it. I know that I received over 100 cards and letters from people thanking me, which, you know, I was humbled by all that, but really just seeing the people crying in the stands who had went through so many, oh, we were so close, you know, but it didn't happen this year, maybe next year. And to see our kids finally pull it over the hump. And it took a abnormal performance out of Mr. Carmichael on that night to lead us to that. But we really allowed the kids that played after that time and the kids now to believe when they step on the floor at sectional time, they're expecting to win. And before, I think there was a lot of hoping going on. And I even saw it before we got to that point where we'd miss a free throw at the end or we wouldn't get a defensive stop when we needed to. And, you know, the five that we won, it was just that. We got a big play out of somebody or we did the things that it took to win in March. And so now I believe that, you know, Coach Coach Carmichael has inherited a program that expects to win championships, and I'm sure there's many coming down the road for him. And to see those people come back and talk about what that year meant and how tough it was to get to there, because that team was a talented team and at the end of the season ranked number one, but also understood what commitment had to be given and the role playing that went on with that team. Every young man on that team, from the 12th guy to the best player in Carmichael, knew what their job was. And I can't think of many teams that I had that totally understood from everyone on that bench knew what their job was.
Well, it gives me goosebumps just to listen to you talk about that, because I think sometimes people underestimate the importance of breaking through like that. And that's what high school basketball in Indiana has given so many communities over the years, that opportunity to break through and say, for that night, for that week, for that next week in the tournament, you're one of the 64 teams or one of the final 32 or 16, whatever it might be, it's your day. And you think about all the teams that you may have coached or that were there with Coach Barnheiser and different teams, very capable of winning, but because the ball didn't bounce right or the guy didn't make the right step or the shot didn't fall or the defensive stop didn't happen, just one little thing, finding that and breaking through is so critical. I can think of a team you and I coached our second year together at Washington Catholic. We had a great team. Everybody knew their roles. We weren't very deep. We went about 5.5 deep. 17-3 going in to the final game. At that point, 19-3 against a Bar Eve team coached by Dave Omer. They were 16-4 in the regular season, 18-4 going into that game. And a game that we had beaten them earlier in the year. We were picked by many to win the sectional. They were picked by others to win it. Goes to overtime. They hit the last shot. 35-footer off a screen. Time running out. Devastating, knowing that that team was good enough, but just one thing doesn't happen. We miss a layup. They hit a 35-footer. And you as a coach, even after that win, you see other teams that come through, can't quite find that way to get through, but it's a powerful, powerful moment when the team finds that one thing it has to do and gets it done.
Yeah, and who I know you and I both can remember, you know, Jason Omer knocking that shot down and the feeling that we felt as maybe we didn't do a good enough job and yet probably didn't coach any different than we had when we won it. And it wasn't good enough on that particular night. And we both know that, you know, the blame goes around to all these people. But in reality, it just came down to a little bit of luck not having that play happen.
And Coach, you know, talk a little bit about that. You know, you had great success in your career. But like any coach who does it long enough, you have the downtimes too. The team that didn't quite win it, or a team that's just not very talented. And sometimes we do our best coaching with those teams, even though it's not realized or recognized. And sometimes it's in those moments, the last-second shot you get beat on in a sectional final that you could have won. Those are the times you have to step up and be the leader, be the coach for these young men to help them to understand that, you know, sometimes – it doesn't go your way, but you have the skills and the foundation now to move on and be successful the next time.
Right. And, you know, we had teams the past 2 years that got to the Elite Eight, and the year that started that was 2 years earlier when our recent graduate, JT Yoho, who is now at Wright State, was a freshman. And we didn't anticipate him playing varsity basketball as a freshman, but what happened was we had several kids who got in some trouble with some drugs and alcohol, and we had to remove three potential kids that would have been scorers for us. And because of that, we had to kind of throw Yoho and others to the wolves. And that team went 3-and-whatever, and actually 11. The year before it was 3-and-18 because that's when the suspensions happened. But we got to that point where the building for the previous 2 years started back then. And I enjoyed coaching those 2 years probably as much as any because they did everything they could possibly do to win basketball games. And when JT Yoho was a freshman, we had a couple of young men that were seniors that were averaging probably 75% from the line. We're up by 6 to Bloomfield, our arch rival, in the sectional, championship game, ready to cut them down. And those two young men who are just super, super people, by the way, one of them's going to get married in June, and I just talked to him a week ago. He's a great man. 75% goes up there, and he just misses front end of a bonus. The next guy misses a front end, and all of a sudden the game's tied, and it comes down to that last possession. But I still tell those kids that were seniors with that group, you guys are the reason we did what we did these last 2 years. You set the groundwork for being persistent, persevering over the adversity that our program took, and those were so enjoyable. But yet, that loss will never leave me. One, my son Drew was a senior on that team, but for more importantly, it was a group of guys that totally bought in to Eastern Green basketball, and I wanted them to be rewarded so bad. But yeah, when we won the last 2 years, and they hugged me after we won, I said, this one's yours. This one is yours, too.
And that is the way a lot of coaches, good coaches, look at that, because they remember what it took to get to the point of cutting down those nets. And it always, always, always started the year before, 2 years before, with young men who didn't get that chance. And you know, it's so interesting because they can learn so much and take so much with them as they become doctors and lawyers and teachers and fathers and people to take care of their parents. So much about hanging in there, handling the adversity, getting and making adjustments to move themselves and to move the people around them forward. And I think that's the wonderful thing that comes from athletics in high school, and the wonderful thing that comes when you have an outstanding coach and teacher, and I mean teacher, leading them like yourself. Coaches, we get ready in this segment. I knew it wouldn't be long enough. It never is on this segment. I want to ask you to just share with us a little bit. You're out of coaching. You're in your first year being out. Just for listeners to kind of understand what you go through as you debrief and go through that time away, tell us what it's like for you now that you're out and you're watching Eastern basketball and high school basketball from a totally different perspective.
Well, and I know you know this, it's been difficult. I'm not going to lie. There's been a lot of, when we had the weather change sometime in October, there was kind of a big drop in the temperature, and you go out and the leaves are changing, and you're thinking, for the first time in 31 years, I'm not preparing some team to play basketball. It really was tough. And I'm not going to lie, there's been a lot of days that were really, really enjoyable, and the time has been great to spend with my family. And I know the good Lord had a plan for me in terms of, you know, I had a homesick daughter at Purdue that we had to pay a lot of attention to, and there were other things going on. But it's just so different to talk to people, and you know, I have not seen an Eastern Green basketball game yet, and that's just my idea to stay away and let Levi Carmichael be Levi Carmichael, not anything else. So, but I have scouted some games for him, and I've been to Wright State to see three basketball games of JT Yoho's, and seen this, been to all but one of my son's games in the seventh grade watching him coach. But you really sit back and I don't mean this as a direct criticism of fans necessarily, but sometimes sitting up in the stands you get a whole nother viewpoint of the basketball game, and I just realize sometimes that a lot of people do not understand the things that that guy on the sideline goes through, and you hear them make statements that are just grossly out of line in terms of what they think is happening on the floor. And I'm not discrediting fans, because we'd be nowhere without them, but sometimes they don't get the whole perspective of what goes into it and how much time and effort that you spend in trying to get that kid to do, for instance, feeding the post. I heard a guy, a lady up in the stands say, you know, do they ever work on that? And I laugh so hard, because I know you and I both know how that is. You're spending probably more time than you need on that one fundamental, and yet their kid can't execute it. So it's given me that perspective to realize that, you know, some of those people that were critical of what you did over those period of years really just doesn't have the education about the game, not necessarily against you personally. And so that's been refreshing for me. And then obviously you hear the people that come up and you know, thank you for those years. And you get a letter from a parent like I got last week that she said she always stood behind me because people would say, what's he doing? Why is he doing this? And she said, trust me. If coach says it's what we're supposed to do, then it's about making our kids better. And so I get a letter from her son the first game night, and he says, thank me for everything that we've done. And I'm not – I bring that up because I would have never got all those letters had I not been out of coaching. And yet it was really refreshing for me to say, maybe I did have a little bit of an effect on a few individuals, and they were better people. So that's been the most refreshing thing. The most unrefreshing thing is just, boy, we're all competitors as coaches, and we miss that, and we miss being around the kids and the games and even the officials. We miss being around those guys, and I think it's been tough, you know. And you know, God willing, maybe someday I'll get back in this business, but if not, the one thing that I've learned is that all of us coaches, and I mean all of us, even the ones that didn't have as much success, we did make an impact. We truly did.
There's no doubt about it, Coach. You made an impact on my life 26 years ago, 27 years ago, and I certainly appreciate it. You did a great job. And as you and I know, it may happen again. You may be back in it. We may be, but you just never know what's going to happen. But thanks for being with us. We look forward to having you in the coming weeks as a contributor talking about basketball up in the Greene County and Bloomington, Monroe County area. It was great having you, Coach.
Well, it's always a pleasure, Coach. I value those 5 years. I'll never forget them, and our friendship is, you know, lasts forever. And I hope you can always say I was the most loyal, dedicated assistant to you, and just try to do what you asked me to do. But I'll those were great times, no question.
Well, and we'll have more in the future. God's been good to us, and he's always good to us. So thanks for coming on. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll talk some Indianapolis hoops with Don Schulteis. You've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Are you in the market for a new fence? Look no further than the Willis Fence Company. Willis Fence Company offers wood fences, chain link fences, aluminum and iron fences, and polyvinyl fences. Give fence professional Joe a call at 630-2449 for a free estimate today. The Willis Fence Company, a fence for every taste and budget.
Come on, let's move. Come on, let's move.
Where do we scrimmage?
We don't scrimmage. No shooting either.
Ain't no fun.
My practices aren't designed for your enjoyment.
Do you have a question or comment for Coach K or Joe? You can call into the show at area code 773-897-6325. Now, back to the Coach K and Joe Show.
Hey, and we're back, and we're going to be talking some hoops up in the Indianapolis area. Wow, has things just taken off? Some great games have been going on up there. Warren Central seems to be in the middle of all of them. And, of course, they've got an IU recruit getting some things done on the court. We're getting ready to bring Don Schulteis on. He's our contributor, our hoops man up in the Indianapolis area. Don, a lot of basketball and a lot of good, exciting basketball being played in Indianapolis.
Yes, Coach K, good to be back with you. And coming off last weekend, as I mentioned on the air last week, that things were going to start to kick into high gear, and they have. And I'll tell you, I think that every week there's going to be a couple of key games that could disrupt the order of things, if you will, regarding rankings and top teams and things like that. And last week did just that. We talked about me attending the Cathedral Warren Central game, and at the time, Cathedral was ranked number one overall in the state as well as in 4A. They got beat by a very good Warren Central team, 61-60. Devin Davis really put on a show. He had 30 points and 15 rebounds, played pretty much the entire ball game, and looked just spent towards the end of it when he ended up missing a crucial foul shot, but was definitely the reason that Warren Central stayed on top and ended up winning that game. And as you may recall, Colin Hartman, who is also going to be attending Indiana University with Devin next year for Cathedral, did not play in that game. He had a concussion and was out all last week, and had to sit out both games over the weekend that Cathedral played. And he could have been the difference. So they'll have the opportunity to possibly have a rematch in the sectional, and it could be a good one.
You know, Don, talking about rematches and Warren Central, when you look at Davis, what are his strengths? For those listening, what are his strengths when he's out on the court?
Well, I think one of the things that people should try to visualize is Devin Davis is he's a physical stud. I mean, he is he's thick, he's very muscular, but he runs the floor really well. And the other thing that I really was impressed with him is his leadership. He wasn't a rah-rah kind of leader, but he just led by example and would pull a teammate over at a particular time and give his direction and things like that, and they all followed him. But he definitely, not only can he score, but he does a lot of the other things. He's the first to be on the floor for a loose ball, and he had 30 points in that game and 15 rebounds, so he commanded the inside, and he can go inside and outside. You got to respect both parts of that game. So he offers Warren a lot, and he's got a nice supporting cast in Jerron Lands, who was a transfer. He's a 6'5 kid that transferred from Brownsburg. And another player by the name of Jordan Garnett, who Greg Graham, the coach of Warren Central, calls the X Factor. Jordan had 19 points in the game as well. And, when you have a third scorer like that, it's hard for these high school teams to defend all three.
Another team and player that you've mentioned and talked about, and he seems to continue to be playing well, even though he's a freshman, Aaron Gordon.
Yeah, Aaron has really jumped off to a great start this year as a freshman. We knew he would. We talked about him when we did kind of our preview on the show 2-3 weeks ago, and he's averaging 27.7 points a game. The first game out, he had 31, I think, against Pike, They lost that ball game, but have since have won the last two. Their North Central is ranked number 6 in 4A right now, and they play a really high caliber Carmel team. Carmel is ranked number 1 now in 4A. They're 2-0 for the year, and they actually play tonight. Carmel is traveling to North Central, so their undefeated record will be going into North Central, and they'll have to try to contain Aaron Gordon, along with two of his teammates, Darius Latham, who the football fans listening to the show may recall, he's one of the top-ranked defensive linemen in the country. He's 6'5", senior, and Perry Poindexter, who's a 6'7", junior, support or run with Aaron Gordon on that North Central team. And I tell you, I think North Central is going to continue to be one of the top teams, no matter if they lose a game here or there to these other top teams. They're going to be in a prime position, as they always are, to make a big run in the tournament.
You know, Don, one of the things I noticed in when I was up for the sectional, one of the sectionals up with you a year or so ago, and it continues to be, as the football in the Indianapolis area continues to get better and better. And I think, you know, obviously that's what I call a runoff result of the Indianapolis Colts and how they've connected with this state. You get these young men that are coming out of football that are just so physically strong. They already are outstanding athletes. They're already physically mature for their age, and they also are good athletes who can play basketball. And then they come in from football, and as they start to get their feet underneath them and their hand-eye coordination with a basketball going, I mean, you're talking about some pretty good athletic kids, physical kids, pounding on each other up in that Indianapolis area on Tuesdays and Fridays and Saturday nights.
No doubt about it. As I've been up here now 18 years, and it has amazed me the progress that the area football teams have made, and then as they translate that moving on to the basketball courts. You know, one thing to note is that you'll really see the benefit of that kind of in the first of the new year, because a lot of these most successful football players are playing on programs that, you know, are going a long way in the state tournament and their respective football teams. And it does take a little bit of time to transition from that, from, you know, being in football shape to moving into basketball shape. And it just adds a lot. I mean, I just look at this Darius Latham, and, you know, he had 7 points last weekend in a win that North Central had against Richmond. But I suspect that as the season goes on here in the next few weeks and he gets a little bit more into basketball shape and conditioning and refining his skills, it's going to be those numbers are going up, and what he can bring, you know, physically inside to a North Central team that's got some hot scores, and Aaron Gordon, for example, it's going to really complement their run and as they make that big push into the state tournament at the end of the year.
Hey, Don, I'm going to add, as we run towards our back end of the show, I'm just going to go ahead and add Kurt Gooksell in, and you know Kurt well, and we'll kind of turn this into a round table discussion. Kurt, good, you're with us, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so Kurt's with us, and Donnie, just to continue on with the Indianapolis, and Kurt, feel free to jump in at any point. You've got Carmel ranked number 1 now in Class 4A. You've got some pretty good teams up in that area. Fishers gave Warren Central everything they wanted. Hamilton Southeastern has a good ranking, or is being looked at. Indianapolis Pike, North Central, Carmel. Is Carmel just up there on tradition, or is Carmel a legitimate number 1?
Well, I think partially both. I think that coming into the year, preseason had them around 5-6 because they had lost a lot of productive seniors and their leadership. The biggest thing, they had a lot of depth last year with some underclassmen that were stepping up. Two of the big names for Carmel right now are Zach McRoberts. He's the brother of Josh McRoberts, who starred at Carmel a few years back and was, I think, felt like he got cheated out of Mr. Basketball his senior year, but went on to Duke, I think, and was a one-and-done player and played for the Pacers for a while. Zach's a junior, and they've got a hot shooting guard, Mike Volovic, who is a junior as well. So they've got some underclassmen, and their coach was really concerned that they would come together defensively and as a team, and I think coming out of the blocks, they've showed that. So it'll be a great test tonight when they play North Central and play a very talented team and see how they can defend an Aaron Gordon and the big people inside. But I think Carmel is legitimate number one until somebody proves them otherwise. You know, the other thing is I wanted to just throw into the conversation mix is Cathedral plays Tech, Indianapolis Tech tonight. I'm going to be attending that ball game, and you may recall Trey Lyles, who had committed to Indiana and is now decommitted. He's a junior for Indianapolis Tech. He was the city player of the year last year here in Indianapolis, and Tech brings a 2-1 record to Cathedral, who is 1-1. They ended up beating Broad Ripple last Saturday night, but Cathedral will have their full power lineup in with Colin Hartman. He is back this week, and I traded some emails with his mother this week, and he's fired up to get going, and it's going to be a heck of a game. And interestingly enough, this might be the first of four potential meetings between these two teams. They also are both slated to play in the Hall of Fame Classic on December 28th, along with Jay County and Fort Wayne Northrop. And I may say to your listeners, if they're looking for a hoops fix, that would be a great, great trip to take in some great teams and great talent on the 28th. So they have that potential meeting. The city tournament is coming up in the beginning of next year, so they could meet there, and then they play in the same sectional. So this could be the first of four potential meetings between those two teams.
So who's Lyles looking at?
Lyles, as far as colleges?
Yeah.
Well, I think that I have the feeling that he's going to go play for Calipari. There's rumors up here that he was down at Kentucky for their Midnight Madness. And I just think that he played for the Canadian. He has an interesting birthright. I think he was born in Canada. So he played for the Canadian junior team this past summer, and really dominated the world tournament. And so I think his interest might be in getting somewhere where maybe he can pay his dues of, you know, his 1 year in college and then move on. And who's shown to be better than that than Coach Cal?
Yeah. Hey, you know, let's add Kurt in here, and Don, stay with us. Let's just keep this going. Kurt, as things start to move forward, and I know – we've kind of ranted about this before, but as people are stockpiling, it's almost like an arms race between Russia and the United States. As people are stockpiling these weapons, these players, I guess we're starting to see where these players start to look and say, wow, you know, this guy and this guy are both my type of player, are my position player. Maybe not so quick. Maybe I need to look elsewhere.
Well, so I think some of that takes place, but also, you know, the real good ones want that kind of competition. They want to go and think that they can be that guy and they can beat out no matter what somebody else has or what some coach brings in, that they can still be that guy. And That's what you find a lot, but you also find, like you said, some guys that may look elsewhere when it gets right down to it. So I guess it works both ways.
Well, Kurt, one of the things that I have a problem with and is when these college coaches start to sign so many recruits. Now, I'm an IU alum, and I'm a big IU fan, but I don't see what's going to happen next year when Indiana brings in six new recruits, and they're all basically signed, sealed, and delivered, and there's three seniors leaving, and let's say Cody moves on. There's four. There's two spots there. What's going on? I mean, do coaches go to somebody and say, hey, you're not fitting in anymore, I'm revoking your scholarship and, you know, handing it to the next guy in line here?
Well, I mean, I don't like that at all, and I don't know, you know, I don't know what's gone on, say, at IU even before the season. Would a guy like, I mean, it sounds far-fetched, but a guy like Oladipo say, hey, I think I'm going to be able to leave after this year if I have a good year, so you can proceed to go recruit or go get commitments from somebody else, or will I graduate in three and a half years?
But what if he doesn't have a good year? You know, what if he doesn't have a good year, or worst case, where he, you know, hurts himself and he's expected to come back? So I know you don't have that knowledge, but I just,
right,
I'm having a tough time figuring out how they're going to find the spots unless everything falls into perfect place.
Yeah, it's one of those things where nobody knows the answers to those questions other than the coaching staff and maybe even the players, and maybe on the flip side, again, they don't know, and they're just taking a shot in the dark, and they're in this business where they're always in charge, and they think it's always going to work out, whether there's casualties and things like that along the way. Maybe they don't care about that either, you know. So, it's very interesting if you follow stuff like that, because everybody wants to know how's this going to work, and I mean, I can't figure it out.
I think we're in new territory, guys. I think we've seen some steps towards this with a few of the programs, getting some major kids in, and then they go on the NBA, and then they've got the next rung of kids coming, a la Calipari, and this isn't a shot at UK at all. I think we're in new territory, and how this pans out is going to be interesting, and it's going to come down to some different things, and I'm not asking you to agree with me or not. The integrity issue is going to come down. Hey, you came and recruited me. You said I could play there. Now I'm out, and I think we're going to come into this. Is it turning into a meat market at the very, very top of the echelon of college basketball, or is there discussion that goes on ahead of time about this? But I do worry about it myself. I haven't really seen a lot of this outwardly in the recruiting ends of things, and maybe in a future show we'll get to talk to some college assistants about it or a college coach about it. But I wonder about the integrity issue, commitment, loyalty, and then you can turn around and say, well, what about the player that leaves after 1 year or 2 years? You're right. There's some concerns with that as well, but who's going to say no to a kid who can go out and make $10 million? So this is an interesting question. And I think we're right in the middle of it in this state, because we have a number of kids in the Indianapolis area, in the southern Indiana part of the state, that could be in this situation going forward.
Well, I just point out, I'm not going to pick on any particular player, but, you know, when I attended a couple of IU games and people see Austin Etherington play and, you know, they make comments that, you know, next year he won't be on that team. And he's a good player. He works hard.
Yeah.
Sure, he works hard at practice. He, you know, gets in. But, yeah, maybe he's not as athletically talented, but he's the kind of guy that you look up, and if you want a four-year commitment, he's going to be a heck of a lot better as a senior than he is as a freshman or even this year as a sophomore. And then, you know, the rumors are saying, well, he won't be there next year. They're going to take his scholarship away and hand it to the next guy that's coming in because they need the spot. And I personally just don't believe in it. I don't think if that's the scenario that's going to start taking place here, I just think we're on a real slippery slope.
There's no doubt about that. And Kenny, you mentioned the integrity issue. If you're coaching a player in high school, he has been given a scholarship offer. He has accepted that. He plans on going to school A, and in the end, they find somebody better, and they say, "Well, we don't need you anymore." That coach better not go back to that high school again and try to recruit the next guy that's coming up, because those lines are going to be off. And these coaches got to watch out who they're doing this to, and knowing that there's going to be other good players coming to that program. And I got to feel like some of these coaches aren't going to be welcome in that high school or on that AAU circuit with that team if they continue to mess with their players. Would you agree with that? If you had a kid or some kids coming up and that same coach came back after he did what he did to your older guy?
Kurt, you come up with another great point and absolutely right on. If Don Schulteis's son is playing for me and I go through the recruiting process with them and we get him lined up at a university and all of a sudden we've committed, I mean, the coach gets in that commitment with them, at least the good coaches I know, and they're a part of that process, and then that thing goes south on them like that, you are absolutely correct. It's going to be tough on the next go-around to trust, to have the integrity belief that he's coming and he's good. These guys, when you're coaching these guys in high school, you're demanding a lot out of these young men, at least the coaches I know, and you knew me, I did too, and so you made a commitment to them and them to you, and when you start going with them to the next step for the next level, you're right there with them. So their joy is your joy, their pain is your pain, and their disappointment is your disappointment, and you're right. And that's what happened with Coach Davis when he was at IU. He started recruiting a lot outside the state and not looking at the Indiana kids, and the high school coaches kind of turned and closed the door a little bit on him, and so those kids end up in North Carolina and Duke and Michigan State, and that scenario can play itself out in a different way, the one we're talking about.
Well, isn't it, though, that these college coaches, and I've heard them comment when they're being interviewed or read articles where, you know, some of them make it a point to say that the scholarship offer is a year-to-year basis only. It's not a four-year deal. I mean, I think there should be an understanding that people are fulfilling their, you know, quote-unquote requirements that they should be automatically renewed. And I think kids going into college are thinking it that way. But, you know, technically it is a year-to-year scholarship, and it could be reassigned or not offered the next year. I mean,
but again,
is that
Don,
accurate?
Yeah, you're right, but that's where the integrity and commitment comes in. And most coaches from the generation that we've had committed to that. As long as that kid did what he was supposed to do, as long as he gave his effort, as long as he did his job in a classroom, they didn't play it like that. They made a commitment. You come to our university, you give me your best for 4 years, and you'll be here.
Well, you're right, Coach, and I've heard several coaches say, I'm not going to run this guy off because if he can't play or he's not doing what he's supposed to on the court and not have developed, then it's my fault for recruiting him. I'm not going to take it out on him, so he's going to stay. But, I mean, this is not at the elite level that we're dealing with the Indianas, the Carolinas, the Kentucky. It's a whole different ball game between what they're doing recruiting-wise and what the mid-majors are doing. I mean, it's fascinating.
But in the last 3 to 5 years is where we're seeing this, really the last three, because even before that, you'd look at a North Carolina team, and they still had that kid that was recruited. He was one of the best players in his state, but when he got there, he wasn't the best. But he still had his scholarship, and he still was there. Now, there have been cases where a kid goes as a walk-on, a preferred walk-on, and he has a scholarship for a year. And then the next year they need that scholarship back, but that agreement took place before that. If an opportunity was there, we'll get you on a scholarship, but we may need that back, a la Kyle Couric at Louisville. He went through that. He went on as a preferred walk-on, eventually got a scholarship, but gave up his scholarship his final year to Louisville because he knew that that was a possibility. And I guess you can say, well, they'll start telling these kids it's year to year, but, man, I'll tell you what, I'm going to be standing there if I'm just a little bit of rung below Indiana. If I'm a Purdue, I may be standing there saying, hey, you're going year to year. I'll commit to you for 4 years. And maybe that's the new recruiting opportunity for those guys that aren't at the elite level as a Duke, North Carolina, Kentucky, IU right now.
Or be there, you know, when these elite programs, you know, start making their cuts because, you know, again, getting back to IU, I don't see how it all works out for them. They've got six new players coming in that have signed, and they don't have the spots, and somebody's going to be out if some others don't go pro or you know, maybe there's some people suffering academically that we don't know about, and they're kind of on a probation. I have no idea, but it's just it just doesn't work as it is today.
Hey, well, let's we're going to be talking about this a lot going forward, and I know Kurt and I had already touched on this earlier. Joe had come out about this oversigning, but we're going to have to watch how this process goes. Let's jump back in the high school level just a little bit from a player perspective. Down here a few days ago, we had Jeffersonville and Evansville Bossy hook up at Evansville Bossy. Of course, Bossy has a nice team. Young team yet, but they seem like they've been around forever. They've got Jaquan Lyle, a junior, who's being looked at by IU, Tennessee, Ohio State, you name it, they're looking at him. They also, Jeffersonville had a young man who's kind of been at Jeffersonville, left Jeffersonville, came back, 6'2", Daryl Baker. He scores 38 points that night at Bossy. Lyle scores 27. Baker hits a jumper with 2 seconds left to give him the win. 65-64, solid player, looks like he's going to be a leader of that Jeffersonville team, can flat score, but he's probably going to have to take the route of the junior college, maybe not qualify. Do we know of other players out there who people are talking about that maybe we don't know yet, at least publicly, where they're at academically from a recruiting standpoint?
Obviously it's early in the game, but there's, you know, several really solid players, but other than the ones you mentioned down here, you're just going to have to wait to see how the season progresses with some of those guys. I mean, you know, the Lyles or the Blake Simmons, they've got going what they're going to have going, so we're just going to have to wait and see on those guys down here.
Well, how good is Blake Simmons? You know, we've read about him up here and heard a little bit about him, and I know he's the coach's son, but what do you guys think of him as far as his talent level?
Kurt, I'm going to let you attack that first.
Well, I think he's very good. He plays in a good system at Castle, and he's a very good shooter. He sees the floor very well, good rebounder. He's a team guy. He won't have to go out and get 25, 30 points a night, and he's just a very consistent type of guy and probably fits into that system that his dad uses at U of E pretty well growing up around it. So, I mean, I think he's really solid. I'd love to have him on my team if I was coaching.
I think he's about at the right level at this point. I haven't had a chance to see him, but just part of a game this year, but I'll see him a couple more times. I think that Don, he probably was looked at from a quickness footwork standpoint like Marty was, not real what I call quick, but does understand the game. As Kurt said, competitor, very good shooter, has a little size on him. He'll fill out. He comes from a family that does fill out. And before, you know, Marty was a physical player as he went along in college. But he might just be, I don't want to even say a step slow, just a little bit. He's not the quickest player, but he's a smart player. And I think he's at a perfect spot going forward in college.
Well, I might add that Jaylen Brown, he's a 6-foot point guard. I mentioned this a few weeks ago when we were talking about players up in this area. He'll be joining Blake at Evansville next year. He had 18 points last night in that loss to Warren Central, went into overtime. So, you know, the things that I've read about, I haven't seen Jaylen play yet live, but I've heard he could help Evansville, you know, over the course of the next couple of years. So just wanted to add that in.
Hey, Kurt, Syracuse. I had a question earlier in the show asking, you know, what do we think about Syracuse? How come people aren't talking about Syracuse? I got to tell you, Syracuse is solid. Solid resume, top to bottom. Great coach, great defense, pound the boards. I think Syracuse will make some noise this year all the way through. What do you think?
Have they been to the airport yet? It's like usual. They don't play out of Syracuse in the month of November or December. But, yeah, I mean, they're really good. I mean, they're one of those teams. You know, they, Kansas, they're out there. Duke, Indiana, of course. You can. There's about five or six, and you can throw Syracuse into that mix. After a while, I watched them last night against Long Beach a little bit. And, you know, they play that good matchup zone defense. They've got some shooters. And I think they're pretty good, too.
You know, we've got jumping back to high school, and I'm sorry to jump back and forth, but we're getting close to the end of the show. And, folks, remember, the live portion may be ending, but we're going to stay with it on the podcast. We've got a developing story down here in Evansville. And Don, I don't know if you've got much press up in Indianapolis concerning it. And that's Evansville Harrison with the three Duncan brothers. And guys, I am not saying that they are at the highest level. That's not my point. But it is unusual. We've had twins before. But it's been a long, long time since we've had three brothers capable of playing at a high level, you know, as far as Evansville Harrison's schedule is concerned, successfully. You've got Ernie, who's a junior, and then you've got Stanley and Everett, who are 6'5", 6'6", depending on who measures them, sophomore players. And they're all three varsity players. They're all three scorers. Ernie's probably a better passer, maybe not as consistent scorer. Everett was supposed to be the guy who could score, and now Stanley's coming out, and he's scoring too. It's really an interesting storyline going forward for Harrison, not just this year, guys, but it will continue into next year. Don, I don't know if you've heard much about Harrison, but it is an interesting story to have three brothers on the varsity at one time, all three of them major contributors.
Well, I did see Harrison play Jasper over Thanksgiving weekend, and I was impressed by the Duncan brothers, specifically one of the twins. I think it was Stanley. I thought his awareness on the court and his ability to shoot over people and things like that just stood out to me. But it's kind of like watching Bar Reeve, isn't it? And you know, all the same names and trying to keep them all straight. So it should be interesting. I see where Harrison's ranked in the top 10 of 4A as well.
Yeah, will you get a chance to see Harrison, Kurt?
Well, I saw him in the Jasper game. I did that game, the same game you saw, and I was impressed with. They didn't rush anything. They didn't take bad shots, the twins and even Ernie. They let the game come to them. And I was just impressed overall with the team that Coach Spear had. He had some guys that could play the point. He had bigger guys, bigger athletic guys off the bench. They had some guys that even started last year that came off the bench and played well because the emergence of the Duncans into that starting lineup. I mean, they went 6, 7, 8, 9 guys deep. It was pretty neat to watch.
Yeah, and there'll be some good matchups here coming up. You'll have Castle, who's ranked number 8, playing Harrison. You'll have Bossy, who's ranked number 6 and 3A, playing Harrison. So there's really going to be some good games as far as looking at some good players in Southern Indiana. Of course, Simmons at Castle, Jaquan Lyle and Farrell, a couple kids at Bossy, and then the Duncan brothers and their teammates at Harrison. So I really think when you look at the overall state, we get some really solid basketball high school. And you know, we'd like to be able to say we know more about how this thing is going to shake out. And in the old 10 years ago, we would. But with basketball on the high school level really not breaking out till December 1st in a lot of places, these next couple weeks is where they shake out a little bit and we get a little bit better feeling for them. All right, guys, before we end this up, you look at your top 25 college basketball. You've got Indiana, of course, number one, Duke pushing them, Michigan, Syracuse. When you look at those top 25 teams and you've seen the polls, is there any team that has surprised you or any team that you expected a little bit more from? Go ahead, Kurt.
Look at a team like Michigan State. They've been kind of up and down and watching their games, but you know how Izzo goes toward the end of the season, and they play some good teams early, then they kind of get better as the season progresses. They've been kind of so-so, but that's what you come to expect out of them. Kentucky, you've talked about them earlier, and I don't think anything's wrong with Kentucky either, like you said. They have some normal type of freshmen like everybody else has. And when you're in that system and your point guard is not ready to do what Cal wants you to do, not to say that a guy, like Pete did or some of those other guys did, they grew into that. So they're not ready to play right now, and they played some good teams. I mean, it's not easy to go to Notre Dame and play in that environment and come out of there with a win. You know, they lost to Baylor at home to snap that winning streak. But, maybe Kentucky, just because I'm used to him getting them ready earlier, but, those are the teams that, I don't, see having a problem later on, but right now they're kind of struggling.
I'd say from my standpoint, I watched Florida play the other night against Florida State, and I had no idea how good Florida could be this year. And I know they've been climbing into the rankings, and Billy the Kid has just been putting together a very nice team, and they just beat the heck out of Florida State. And so maybe they're a team that is surprising on the upside for me, just because I didn't realize what they had coming back and how good they could be at this point in the season.
Well, I'm jury's still out for me. I'm looking at these rankings, and I'm seeing a lot of the same teams, and I'm wondering, what about Illinois? 8-0, I don't know. Is that because of their schedule? I thought they had the soft end. They did win the Maui Classic, but I thought they had the soft end of that, my opinion. I'm just not sure. I'm seeing some familiar teams that you see every year, but when it comes to nut cutting time, they don't seem to be in the mix. We'll see how it shakes out. I still think, and guys, you're going to get so mad at me when I say it, but I'm going to say it. I still think the Big Ten's overrated, but we'll see in a couple months. Butler standing at 8-2. They've got Northwestern coming up on the 8th. And Indiana on the 15th. And Donnie, isn't the 8th your birthday?
It is. Tomorrow my 49th birthday. So
will you be out celebrating with Butler at Northwestern?
No, I might tune him in on the TV and celebrate that way, but I won't be following them live.
Aces are 5-3 this year. Marty's got his team regrouped a little bit. Kurt, they've got Colt Ryan back, seemed to be playing a bit better basketball, handed it to Miami of Ohio the other night.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not sure what Miami's got this year, but it looks like he's got them playing decent.
Oh, 14 out of 18 from the arc the other night, and this DJ Valentine from Kokomo, he's in the mold of Colt Ryan just when Colt's getting ready to graduate. That kid is tough on tough, and you shoot it like that, you're going to beat most teams. They had open shots all night long, and they were hitting them.
And the good thing, I think, to go along with that is a little offense to go with what Marty usually plays, some pretty solid defense. So you don't want to just try to outscore. You want to play both ends of the court and really get quality wins. And I think Evansville is doing that right now. Guys, great show again this week. I think we're going to continue to wonder about this over-signing stuff. Please keep an eye on that. I know it's going to come up again. I'm going to try to get Bill Somm back with us and get a little NCAA perspective on a few things and how he might think the NCAA looks at things like this. But great having you both on the show again this week.
No problem.
My pleasure, and always fun to be part of the Coach K and Joe show.
Hey, Coach, I want one of these college football jobs. How does one get one of those?
Well, Butch Jones just signed 6 years, I believe, $18 million. $18 million.
Not bad for somebody's sixth choice or whatever it was.
And you know what was interesting? He kind of hem-hawed around and waited and waited.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was just laying in the weeds. They know what's going to happen. And these bowl games, these exhibition games, you get out the confidence pools and whatever. It's great to see these teams battling each other with no head coaches. This coach is leaving for that job. This coach got fired. Will this team play hard because they don't want to be at this bowl? This was the best time of the season for college football because of the big games like the Notre Dame-Alabama game, but also all this coaching mess. I mean, I love looking at it. I love studying it. I want to see why this coach wants to take this job or this guy doesn't want to go here or there. It's unbelievable. I mean, I think Purdue came out. As I first analyzed it, I was kind of lukewarm to it. But the more I hear about this guy and the way he goes about things, I think they're going to be all right with Hazel. I think he's all right, and he's going to get coached in the Kent State bowl game, which that's cool for Kent State to have him do that, unlike Barry Alvarez, who wanted no part of Brett Bielema coaching his squad. So he's going to take some glory and go down there and coach him since he's won those three Rose Bowls and he reminded us about.
I think that's kind of ridiculous that he's coming AD and taking over that team, and he should have handed it to one of the loyal assistants that are still with
the
program, let them, you know, have that opportunity.
Hey, guys, you know, we brought this up earlier in the show, Joe did. The salaries these assistant coaches are starting to get, we're talking about upwards of $500,000 for you know, the better assistants and the Big Ten, where they're at. Maybe they're behind, a step behind in paying some of the quality assistants, and Wisconsin's coach leaving to Arkansas because he felt like the overall financial package, not just for him, but for a staff he could build. What do you think about these large amounts of money going to pay people in an amateur sport?
What, the coach? You mean talking about the coaches getting all this money?
The coaches. You know, you're bringing in amateurs and you're asking them to play for nothing. You're giving them a college scholarship, maybe, as Don said, and you might take it away from them a year before the next year. But billions of dollars coming in, coaches, assistant coaches getting paid up to $500,000. The salaries, if they're good, you got to pay them. But where's the Big Ten at in all this? Are we behind? Is Wisconsin behind? Is IU behind? Is the SEC that far ahead in paying their coaching staffs the money?
Well, I think the good programs are. I mean, it surprised me that Wisconsin wasn't paying what Bielema thought that they should be paying for assistant coaches. I would have thought they would have been one of the schools that have paid their assistants very well. Purdue, I mean, it's been legendary how they've cut corners with their assistants. Indiana, too. But Indiana kind of met the bar a little bit when Wilson came in. But I guess it's the sign of the times. When you're making all that money from these TV contracts, that's what you have to do. You have to pay your head coaches. You've got to pay your assistants so they'll go somewhere else.
Well, it's a big money game, and I know so many people, you know, we'd still love to watch college athletics because those kids really get out there, and those young men, young ladies, they care, and they put it all out on the court. As we end the show this week, folks, get out there and go see a high school basketball game. Nobody said it any better than Kurt Guxell did a couple weeks ago. Get out there, take your sons, your daughters, and support your local high school teams. It's great entertainment. You get a yell, you get a scream. I think, Don, you've seen great crowds up in the Indianapolis area.
Yeah, the Cathedral Warren Central game probably had around 2,500 there. And you know, the thing that's great about the metro area up here is that you see players from other teams that aren't playing that night come in. You see other people that are maybe backing a different school, but they're just they heard about the matchup and they want to experience it live. And you know, that's what makes the sport great. And I concur with Kurt. You know, there's no better value than going out and watching a high school game for what, you know, for the $5-6 that you pay to get in, and you see these kids working hard, and it's quite talented games. I mean, it's competitive, and you know, I just think it's a great value.
Well, we're going to end it for the week, folks. We appreciate you tuning in. We'll be back next week with the Coach K and Joe Show. Thanks to all our guests. And once again, have a great weekend. Support your local teams. You've been listening to the Coach K and Joe Show.
The following presentation of the Coach K and Joe Show was brought to you by Harmon Dental Care, Jasper Today, Idea Fusion Media, and the Willis Fence Company. Join us next Friday from 11 to 1 for the next show. Until then, visit www.jaspertodayonline.com or go to iTunes to listen to podcasts of past shows. See you next week.